an interview on August 17, 1997 with Reverend Morrill Martin in the Crow's Nest Cottage for the Bayside Historical Preservation Society Oral History Project. Okay, now, question one, Dad, is what dates cover your Bayside experience? When did you first come here, and how old were you?
The dates, we first came to Bayside in 1922, and my father, Reverend Charles W. Martin, served as pastor of the Belfast, East Northport, and West Northport churches, and charge in the Methodist Conference.
Question number two is, how did you discover Bayside, or how did your father discover Bayside?
My father, the Belfast minister, was involved in the worship services of the Wesleyan Grove Camp Meeting Association, and I participated in the children's and youth program services held in the Bangor Chapel at the top of the hill.
Next question, Dad, is, when you came here, how did you get here? How did you travel? And how long did it take? And did you ever come by steamboat?
No, we did not come by steamboat, but we came by automobile.
And what was the trip like?
Wonderful trip, coming to the state of Maine. And to enjoy the summer, each summer of my life.
What kind of a car did your father drive then?
Model T Ford.
Where had he bought it?
In Belfast.
You don't remember what he paid for it about, do you?
No.
What color was it?
Black.
Did anybody else ever drive it except for him?
No.
Traveled here. Didn't your father at some times coast down the hills?
Yes.
Why do you do that?
Save gasoline. Post office in Belfast coming down.
What would he do?
Just put it in neutral and coast.
Would he tell you he was doing that?
No, you could feel it.
Was it scary?
At first, yes, but not after that.
Did he have a sense of humor about it?
Yes.
What cottages have you occupied in the circle, your family, since the start?
Originally, we were in the Belfast cottage because he was pastor in Belfast, and the pastor in Belfast had the privilege of living in the Belfast cottage, which was next to the Brewer and between the Brewer and the Lincolnville. The Brewer still stands, but the Lincolnville torn down quite a long while ago.
Talk some about, after you moved from the Belfast, the transition to the Crow's Nest Cottage. Your father bought that cottage?
Yes, from Ida Miller in Rockland, Maine.
And wasn't that because the Millers had another cottage at Owl's Head and they preferred going down there?
Yes, they were accustomed in those times to going there instead of coming here. Originally, their interest was here, but it changed as the years went on.
And so the Crow's Nest is the only cottage in the circle that points in a different direction. Do you think the Crow's Nest Cottage was actually here before the rest of the circle was built?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay. Okay, so your father and mother bought the Crow's Nest and then moved into it. And then you and your family bought the Carmel Cottage, was it in 1960?
Approximately, yes.
And do you remember who the family bought the Carmel Cottage from? Who did we buy the Carmel from?
Sidney Rand.
And can you tell us anything about Sidney Rand at all? And why he was selling the Carmel?
He was the son-in-law of Mr. Spear, who purchased the cottage first.
Okay. In 1935.
In 1935.
And did Mr. Rand have ties somewhere else in the summer? Was he not a Bayside person? Is that why he sold?
Yes. He had a cottage elsewhere, up near Waterville.
By China Lake, I think it was. Now, would you talk some about the stores in Bayside, Tuttle's store, and what it was, and the stores at the top of the hill? What were the names of the principal stores?
Across from the hotel.
The Tuttle store was across from the Bayside Inn, right?
Yes. And it had one or two owners at that particular time.
As far as you knew, was Tuttle store open all 12 months or just in the summer?
Just in the summer.
And did it have various sundries and so on? Was there any special quality? Was it just a little general store?
General store. Vegetables, canned goods, and so forth.
Was it a post office at that time, or did that post office come with Lowell and Arlene Parker?
That came to Arlene's time when she was postmistress.
Were there any other stores that were popular in Bayside at that time?
There were two up on the hill in another part of the town. Up towards the country club.
Okay. They were similar kinds of stores?
Yes. Grocery.
Talk some about some of your memories of Bayside, having first come here in the 20s. Give us some of your favorite memories that have imprinted your impressions of Bayside, some special things.
Well, it was a center of activity for the Methodists in this part of the state of Maine. Many, many churches involved. And they, some people in those churches had cottages in Bayside, so it was the natural thing to attend services in the auditorium, in Auditorium Park, down from the pump at the top of the hill on the main street.
And the services were first offered in the 1800s in a tent, right? And that tent then became a wooden structure.
That's right.
When you first came to Bayside, was it still a tent, or had the wooden structure already been built?
Wooden structure had already been built.
Was it painted, or was it unpainted wood, or?
Painted white.
Painted white. And you told a story in which the wooden structure filled up so much of the park that the cars barely could turn around it as they came down here by the Crow's Nest. Isn't that right? The road was...
The road that was seldom used because it was built for a horse and a team. And then eventually they improved the road so automobiles could come down around behind the big auditorium that stood on the shore.
Do you remember the day that they took down the auditorium?
No.
No? You came back one summer and it had been taken down during the winter at that time?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, could you talk some about, as I remember, You and other people have said there used to be a very active horseshoe pitching league up. What street was it on?
I remember the street.
Okay, but it was up
very near the stores on the top of the hill.
Stores by the top of the hill.
It was the country club.
I think it was on that passageway where they keep boats now. That is,
right.
It isn't really an active street, but it is a pass through where boats are kept.
That's right.
Talk some about.
They had
pitching horseshoes. Did you do it every night or once a week? What was it like?
Pitched whenever the opportunity came and people were there to pitch.
Okay.
During the day, especially weekends, it was something that those who loved horseshoe pitching enjoyed the most when they were in Bayside. And some of the pitchers were excellent. They came from many places. competition Sunday afternoons drew a large number of people who enjoyed watching.
Would you say Sunday afternoon was the principal competition of the week?
Exactly.
Middle of the afternoon, or was it 5 o'clock?
No,
or
it was right after dinner, and lasted until 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay, you mean right after lunch it began?
Yeah.
Did they give at the end of the summer, was there any kind of an organization that awarded a grand prize, or was there a competition of sorts?
No.
No? Do you still have any of your horseshoes?
Yes.
Could you pitch today if you wanted to?
You bet your life, and get some ringers, too.
I bet so, too. Mr. Kendall was a postman.
Postman, and he lived in the Bucksport cottage at the top of the circle next to the Orono. And he was the one who taught me how to pitch. He was a ringer pitcher. Didn't miss. So he gave me the technique of making one turn of the shoe, and on the post it would go. And we had a tremendous lot of fun, and it drew large crowds to watch the horseshoe pitching.
Was Mr. Kendall a postman in Belfast or somewhere else?
I think in Bucksport.
Okay. Did he have a sense of humor?
Yes. He was a regular guy.
Okay, now tell us a little about when you could go up to a cottage in Bayside and actually buy some baked beans if you wanted to. Where was that? What was the story with that?
Well, my dad being pastor in the East Northport Methodist Church, along with Belfast and West Northport churches, had as a parishioner Mrs. Beach, and she was noted for her cooking. And she was especially adept in cooking the best baked beans that were available anywhere in America.
That's good.
And
what did she sell them to you in, a little pot?
Yes. She had the containers that I'm not sure where she got them, but they were adequate. You could get a quart or you could get a gallon of them, depending on the number of people you were going to serve.
Did you buy beans from her many times?
Many times. Enjoyed every bean.
Well, what did Mrs. Beach look like?
She
as an example.
Robust. She looked like a cook. That's what she did best, was cook. And people appreciated Mrs. Beach.
The Northport Golf Club was also part of your experience here when you were a young man, as you caddied. That was one of the ways for a young man to make money during the summer.
Exactly.
Talk a little bit about Northport Golf Club.
At that time, it drew a large number of people, and caddying was a moneymaker. However, not one that you would get wealthy on, because a round would cost that golfer 35 cents. Then it boosted to a 50 cents, and then eventually to a dollar. And I caddied for Dr. Ansel Lothrop in Belfast. And I'll never forget being down on the course, on the fairway, which would have been the second fairway, and being hit by one of the balls that Dr. Ansel Lothrop hit off the ninth tee. Hit me right in the back.
Were you caddying for someone else on that day?
Yes, exactly. Didn't even know that Lothrop was up on the ninth tee. Quite a few feet existed between the tees where they hit the ball and where it landed.
And would you caddy some days for two people at one time?
Yes, that's when we got rich. Well, we made 35 cents a round. That's 9 holes of carrying a bag loaded with golf clubs. Or if you carried double, you could get double the money. But they did boost it to 50 cents and eventually a dollar a round.
You enjoyed that?
Very, very much.
Was there anybody you remember as a particularly big tipper?
Dr. Lothrop and he was the mainstay for me. Oh, Admiral Pratt was another one. It was a delight to caddy for him. He was.
Talk a little bit about Admiral Pratt.
Well, he was chief of naval operations. Lived in Belfast on the top in beautiful home on Primrose Hill.
Right.
And he was a gentleman, a real gentleman, and he was a good golfer. And he was very fair. He not only paid the round fee, but he would always tip generously.
Mm. Now, you've talked at some points that the cottages that were built around the park needed to be repaired on an ongoing basis. Some still do. And at the time that you and your mom and your dad and your brother Edward lived in the Belfast cottage, what would you need to do when it began raining buckets?
Well, because it leaked, the building leaked, it was necessary to hold an umbrella over your head or place it in such a way to remain where it was and keep you protected from being soaked.
So you would have to put an umbrella over your head in the house,
yep,
from the rain. Would the When something like that occurred, and you did have a problem with a house, and in the early times when at least it would appear the houses weren't owned by individual families, how did repairs on cottages, which must have been necessary at some points, get accomplished? Who would take responsibility to do it?
The association had the major responsibility. Those responsible for the homes that were in the circle in particular and further extremities, if the case was such. And they were carefully cared for and a delight to live in. And they were in the center of activity because it was the auditorium park where the big auditorium was stood.
So the association held a responsibility to repair cottages that needed it the most.
That's right.
Do you remember stories when you were having an umbrella over your head? Was it funny, and were there other people in other cottages also experiencing the same, or was the Belfast cottage a bit more run down?
I can only speak for the Belfast cottage. That's the one that I lived in.
During a rainstorm, if you looked in the windows of other houses, did you see umbrellas inside?
No.
All right.
Why didn't you go up on the roof and fix it yourself?
Too young.
Okay, now let's talk some about the leaders and memorable people associated with the campground and Bayside in general. Who would those people be?
Paul Morris's dad was a pastor in Bangor, the Methodist Church, one of the Methodist churches in Bangor. And Paul became the business manager of the campground and was that for quite a period of time. He would assist everybody who needed a room and a cottage or to rent a cottage and so forth. Marion Eaton was a resident in the Winterport Cottage within the circle next to the Rockland and the Eddington cottages, and she was a top-notch golfer, and she was primarily interested in those years in sailing, and she started the sailing school in the campgrounds and attracted quite a bit of attention. People from out of town and cottages in other parts of Bayside would come and be members of the sailing school.
And talk about Reverend Wall a bit. What do you remember about him?
Who?
Reverend E. Lewis Wall.
Oh, he was a pretty good-sized man. In fact, you'd call him stout.
Really?
And yet he got around very well. He occupied a cottage right on the shore.
Who has that cottage now?
Gordon.
Oh, Gordon?
Yes.
The one that sort of hangs out a bit over the property line. When
it is on posts.
When Reverend Wall lived in that cottage, was there a road that went down next to it just
yes.
the way there is now?
Yes.
Do you remember?
The team used to go down that
really? Do you remember anything during that period? Because many of us, of course, have had an interest in Gordon's cottage as it's been one of the ones farthest out on the ledge and buttressed by posts. When Reverend Wall lived there, was it also close to the edge or was there more of a banking underneath it?
No, there might have been a few feet, but not many. It was on a precipice, more or less, all the time I knew it.
And he was a stout man?
Yes, heavy.
1934, there was a flag raising and a dedication of the memorial stone, and what part did your father, Reverend Charles Martin, play in that ceremony?
He was the speaker at that occasion. And that drew quite a number of people because that was the final meeting of those interested in the Camp Meeting Association on the spot.
Let's talk some about the Wesleyan Camp Meeting. Can you tell us anything about the camp meeting for someone who wasn't part of that?
Welcome to attend.
Everybody was welcome to it?
To the services which they sponsored. It was the governing body at that particular time. Services were held every Sunday, and sometimes there was a solid week of services during the summer season.
Not every week, though, in the summer. It wasn't every week, every day.
Occasionally, they had special services to draw the crowds.
What time of day were the services, typically?
Afternoons. They would have drama, plays, soloists, and entertainers. It was a high point in the life of the Camp Meeting Association.
You mean in the afternoon service they'd have drama and plays, or was that at another time? That was part of.
Other times, as well as incorporated in a service of worship.
And was there any activity in the evenings?
Yes.
Any organized activity?
Yes. Special evening entertainment programs.
Entertainment, would it be with a spiritual focus to it?
Exactly.
Would you say? Hymn sings and so on?
Yes, because it was a church camp meeting.
Okay.
And that laid a heavy emphasis upon their relationship to the Lord.
Sunday was one of the principal days in the summer for a Wesleyan campground activity, though.
That's right.
When people came to a cottage from Carmel or from Unity, or from Rockland, how long would they typically come for?
Sometimes they would stay for the season and not miss any. They would have cottages here. Others would come for those services they were primarily interested in.
And if you came to the Rockland or the Belfast cottage as a participant, would you come for 1 week?
Yes. The camp meeting weeks, there were not too many of them, would draw crowds. In fact, hundreds would come.
Would people come and stay in the Union or the...
Boat across the Penobscot Bay from various points.
And the weeks there was...
Stay in the cottages.
I understand. And the weeks there wasn't a camp meeting, would people still come from Carmel or from Bucksport and stay in a cottage
yes.
for rest and relaxation and renewal?
Yes. They had that privilege.
Now, can you give any memory on how much, you said to me once, I think, that it may have cost around $5 a week to come. What do you think people paid to come? Because they did make a contribution, didn't they?
I wasn't the one who paid at that time. I was just a young man. Young fellow.
Do you remember, though, in order to keep the association going, they must have made a contribution?
Yes. The family of those who came to stay and attend the services and the meetings that were held youth meetings as well as adult meetings would pay.
Now, when you came to a cottage for a camp meeting, did you have to bring your own bedding and your own linens, or would those be provided here as an example?
Both. They were provided if necessary, but you'd have your own when you came. You'd bring them with you.
You bring them with you. Were the beds all narrow, single beds?
Yes. Occasionally, there was a double bed, the old-fashioned double bed with a head and foot.
But more generally, it was a single bed?
Yes.
And you could bring your linens, or linens would be provided?
Yes. For the young people of the Epworth Leagues.
So within the circle, you're saying that the Unity Cottage was at one point, not its entire history, a center of activity for children in the summer. That was
yes.
the focus around the circle where children might have activities.
Right. Exactly.
And you're,
the youngest of the children would usually leave the older youth for action in the Unity, and they would go to the Vanguard Chapel at the top of the hill.
Okay. And you said the Union Cottage was owned by a man, a farmer from Union named Mitchell?
Yes.
Do you remember him at all?
Potato farmer. Yes, he was a big man.
Did he come and vacation himself at the Union Cottage at all?
Some, but he was a worker. He didn't use it primarily as a place to come to relax. It was just a drop in and make sure everything was right for the occupants.
Okay. Next session, you're estimating in terms of the people that attended as, are you saying maybe between 200 and 300 people? Was that an estimate that's fair?
Well, maybe 200. That was when they had an outstanding speaker or some special program.
And if they
yes.
if they didn't have that, it would be fewer, but you'd still have upwards of maybe 100 people?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and they would occupy the balcony in that big auditorium as well as the downstairs area. And since it was on the side of a hill, it was sloping, and the building was built in such a way that the floor sloped as well towards the beach.
Now, down off our park here, the campground park, there is a massing of rocks that appears to have once been some sort of dock. Do you ever remember in your lifetime seeing it, or was it even when you were younger just a memory?
Just a memory.
What were the stories that you can recall about that dock? Was it once the dock, in fact, prior to where our wharf now is?
Exactly. Exactly. They would come to that dock and go to their cottages or otherwise.
So would that have been the dock originally in your memory where the Belfast steamboat would have come?
No, that was later on in the history of Bayside.
But originally, that mass of rocks at the base of our campground was a dock of some sort.
Part of the dock.
So there's always been steps coming up from there, then. That's a long history of steps.
Right.
So you never saw it, though, or ever. You never used it, either. It was never then. All right. When you were in the campground, obviously now the campground for everyone is a memory of differing sorts, and this is an important project to preserve that memory, while for many people in 1997 the Northport Village Corporation is more of a reality as we assess taxes and work with them in the preservation of our properties. Do you have any comment or memory of how the Village Corporation came to be, or how the campground worked with it?
No, there had to be a business organization to manage the business of the Camp Meeting Association. So it prevailed for a number of years.
1934 was the last time you said that there was actually a gathering of sorts. And you would have been 22 at that time, I think. Can you, in those teenage years and leading up to 1934, did you sense, leading up to that point, a diminishing of the interest in the campground, or what at the time? We can only read about it in history books in retrospect now and assess it as a history experience. But when you were living it, what was going on such that it, after 1934, it just didn't exist anymore? Why didn't people come?
People came, but they used the cottages for summer vacations, continued to following the closing of the association. And the church was represented to some extent in this area by the Belfast Church in the East Northport and the West Northport churches, closest to the camp meeting site.
Do you remember sensing in the early 1930s and the years leading up to the final meeting smaller attendances or less of an interest in the campground?
Yes.
So it wasn't a surprise in 1933 or 4 when it was finally concluded.
Right. That's right. After the formal services were discontinued, then it didn't persist.
Okay. Now, can you talk some about, just generally speaking, when cottages then, after 1934, these very nice cottages, some of them obviously needed repairs to their roofs, but the cottages were here, and gradually people began to value them for their recreational and their beautiful position with regards to the water. How did the cottages generally move into private ownership? Each story is, of course, its own. But what do you remember noting? Did some member of the parish in a given town really enjoy it very much and say, I'd like to make a bid on a given cottage, or what happened?
Exactly, that's what happened. For instance, the Union Cottage was owned by a potato farmer in Union, Maine, and eventually he had it open for anyone, whether they came from Union or otherwise, to rent a room in that particular, and so in some of the other buildings in the campground area.
Now, was Paul Morris, some remember Paul Morris may have had possession of some of the deeds of the cottages. Well, would you describe Paul Morris at one point? Was he an administrator who managed the, would the deeds of the cottages come into his control for him to dispense?
Yes. His dad was a prime mover in the early years. Lived in Bangor, Reverend Morris, Albert Morris. And so Paul came by it more or less naturally. He had a business mind. He was actually a teacher on Cape Cod, but he considered this of prime importance.
And so,
and occupied the Unity Cottage throughout his career.
And did he, was he one of the principal coordinators of the transitions from campground ownership to private ownership then? He was naturally positioned in a central way to coordinate the transition to private ownership.
Right.
And did Paul Morris himself purchase the Unity eventually? Or did his father, Albert Morris, purchase
yes,
it?
They owned it. It ended up that the Morrises owned it.
I see. And then that went down to Paul Morris and now to Eleanor Morris. And as we know, Eleanor Morris still is alive in 1997 and lives in Zephyr Hills, Florida, and can be contacted. And I can provide that address to the Historical Preservation Society. A couple more questions and then a request for any final thoughts you have on the history project. The Wesleyan Campground Association, also a question that many people don't have an answer to and wonder, how was it governed itself? How were decisions made? How were meetings organized? How did the Methodist Church play a part in governing the Wesleyan Campground Association?
Well, I was not involved, of course, at that time in the leadership or any part of it. But they had the major responsibility for the disposition of the services and the rental of some of the properties.
The association then would have worked in conjunction with the Methodist Church, prior to its being called the United Methodist Church, and within the Methodist Church, the governing, so to speak, body would have been the East Main Conference of the Methodist Church.
That's right, exactly.
So it's the East Main Conference of the Methodist Church in coordination with the Wesleyan Campground Association within that. And finally, what was, for particularly someone who may not be Methodist or only have a sense through pictures of the campground, what was a typical service like? It lasted an hour to an hour and a half, maybe?
Approximately an hour. Sometimes it would run over, but they'd shoot for an hour as the length of the service.
And would it be, if you're a church attender in these years now, would you have noted anything different at one of those services from what you would see in a Protestant church service on a Sunday now?
Not at all.
It was similar to a standard church service then.
Yes, exactly.
Would there be announcements? Sure.
And participants, announcements being made, people with particular interests that needed to be promoted were involved in the programs of the services that were held.
Okay, now how about any final thoughts you have on the Campground Association, the Bayside experience, for people that may be listening to this 100 years from now, in 2097, about the Methodist Campground and Bayside?
Well, when it existed, it was a very happy experience for all that were involved, because they sensed they belonged to something important. And in many instances, they would leave their churches and come to cottages in Bayside, or they would come distances for special services in the auditorium, because they loved it. Camp Meeting Association meant an awful lot to a lot of people.
And it started with people coming in horse and buggies, and it ended with people coming in automobiles.
Exactly.
It started with people who must have used kerosene lamps. And it ended with people using electricity.
That's exactly it.
No televisions, though.
Nope.
This concludes this interview with Reverend Morrill O. Martin. On August 17th, 1997, related to Bayside, the Wesleyan Campground Association, and the Historical Preservation Society's Oral History Project. This is Reverend Jim Martin, Morrill Martin's son, concluding the interview.